Hey everyone, welcome to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
And we have got a rip-roaring show for you today. We're going to be talking about Microsoft and their $5 billion investment in IoT, Qualcomm's brand new vision intelligence chips. Kevin has some insights about voice assistants that you should hear. Plus, is the Apple Watch losing its apps? And does that matter? Comcast is adding Stringify. We've got some exploits, again, with IoT devices and some news. Plus, we're going to talk about me installing the Nest Hello doorbell and what I think. And I dumped a device from my home because, by golly, it does not work. Find out what that is and hear from our advertiser this week, ForgeRock. And learn about the future of hearing from Poppy Crum, who is a chief scientist at Dolby Labs. It is a jam-packed show. So let's get it started with a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is the Unomi platform. For the makers of the free Unomi app, the Unomi platform is a cloud-based platform as a service for companies building solutions for the connected home. Unomi's offerings include ThinCloud. It's a serverless IoT platform for device manufacturers looking to get their products to market quickly and securely. There's also Unomi One, a powerful integration engine that connects to more than 100 top smart home devices. This week on the Stacey on IoT podcast, the Unomi platform is debuting part three of their five-part series on what the next billion-dollar smart home startup will look like. You can find that today by visiting platform.unomi.co/Stacey on IoT. Unomi is spelled Y-O-N-O-M-I. Okay, Kevin. Man, this is going to be a great episode. I realized that I say super all the time. We could start a drinking game with me being super excited or super happy or I don't know. So I'm trying to stop that. Let's see how well I do. You guys, super. If you want, grab a beverage and see what happens. All right. To get started, Microsoft, they announced last week that they were going to spend $5 billion over the next 4 years on the Internet of Things. Kevin, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, they're a big player. We probably don't talk about them as much as we should, but because they're behind the scenes of a lot of things. And what I liked about their news announcement, which I would say is light on details on how they're going to invest. You know, I didn't see anything earth-shattering in there. It was a continuation of their efforts. But what I liked in there is something that I've noted with Google's IoT press announcements is often missing. There were some real actual customers in here and discussions of how these customers use Microsoft's platform for IoT. And when I say customers, I mean Steelcase, Kohler, Chevron, Johnson Controls, United Technologies, the Alaska Department of Transportation, which I thought was kind of cool because they're building smart roadways to monitor weather conditions.
So you want to know, they actually, Microsoft, their IoT stuff and Azure are used by Hershey's to make Twizzler packets. Twizzlers, is that the candy? Yes.
Twizzlers, yeah, that's licorice. Okay. That's my backyard, Hershey.
So they use it to make sure every Twizzlers package is packed with the right amount of Twizzlers. Because before they added sensors and analytics to this process, they actually were like, if you had too many Twizzlers in a bag, that was fine. But if you didn't have enough to meet the weight requirements, you had to just jam more in. And so their Twizzlers were not uniform enough. And so they managed to save money by making them more uniform so they could meet the weight requirements.
The IoT woes of licorice production.
Exactly. So Microsoft has some really good customers here. And I actually emailed them to get a little bit more information. Did I get a lot more? No. But so to put this into context, Microsoft has spent $1.5 billion over the last 4 years. So this is a huge increase in their spending. And they really talk about it. They're going to add more people. They're going to do more in R&D. And they're going to work more with their partners. So a lot of this is going to be training of people and partners, some hiring, and some cool stuff. And apparently this is a really important sentence to Microsoft because they sent it to me twice in the same two-paragraph email. But according to them, quote, by investing even more in IoT, we are committing the resources and innovation to empower companies to take advantage of IoT and the intelligent edge. Yeah, what does that mean? Nothing. But it does mean that Microsoft is excited about IoT. They actually also this week partnered with Tom Siebel's company, C3. C3 is a platform as a service that does a lot of data analytics. And they got started in the energy space, managing and monitoring data for many, many smart grid devices. And they've really branched out into IoT. They actually just last week did a deal with 3M. So this is all in the industrial enterprise side, but this is where the big money is, so we wanted to cover it. Moving right along, Qualcomm has new vision intelligence chips. These are a new line of chips that they made. It's called the Vision Intelligence Platform, and it's basically, it's kind of like what Movidius, which Intel bought, is doing. And a couple weeks ago, we actually announced that Arm is going to have a machine learning platform for the edge, and NVIDIA is actually using its vision processing engine on those, on the ARM design. So everybody's really excited about computer vision at the edge. We've been talking about it here for years, and so it's finally coming to fruition with cheap, low-power silicon that people can buy.
Yay. Yeah, these are the QS603 and 605 chips, and I actually got really excited when I read about where they are looking to apply the technology or where they expect people or companies to apply it. You'll see why in a second. Obvious examples, security cameras, sports cameras, wearable cameras, virtual reality cameras. Here we go. Robotics and smart displays. I just got excited with robotics.
Yes.
Sorry.
The ones with arms are the ones that you're going to put a smart speaker on and have follow you around the house.
Yeah, the smart speaker on the Roomba. I think I'll just wait and get one with arms now.
There you go. Smart speakers, arms, and computer vision. That's what we need in our robots. Okay. These are Wi-Fi only chips, just so you guys know. And Qualcomm has been doing computer vision, but they have been doing it on their Snapdragon processors, which are actually designed for mobile phones. So having something specifically designed for the edge makes a lot of sense. I'd actually, because it's Wi-Fi, you're not going to see this on drones. So I guess the Snapdragon stuff will still be on drones using LTE is my guess. But
oh, I don't know about that because like a lot of the drones do use like a peer-to-peer Wi-Fi to a connected tablet or phone for connectivity. They have very limited range.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe yeah. We will see this in drones.
We sure might, I think. A lot of people use drones for the vision aspect, obviously. The 605 chip, the more capable of the two, can handle simultaneous 4K and 1080p feeds at 60 frames a second.
That is going to suck your battery like nobody's business.
Well, drones generally do.
Yeah. I'm like, woo.
Yeah.
That's iffy, but sure. And I guess, you know, if you're thinking about sticking on a Roomba, that's not wired while it's working. So sure. Okay, so that's Qualcomm's big news. Let's talk about Kevin's story this week. Yesterday, Kevin posted a story that was on Wednesday about adding context to... That's the big theme. That's what we're always talking about.
Yeah.
This is really... Kevin, you tell it.
Well, I think there's an opportunity for our home assistants, and I don't know if people have thought about this or if people really want this. I know I do, but I know I'm weird, so that's okay if you don't want this. But... our voice assistants are good at providing contextual information when we ask for it, but context means right place, right time. So why aren't our assistants feeding us that information at the right time? Meaning an extension of their existing notification capability. Right now on your Echo, there are notifications. You may get a sound when somebody calls you. You may see the light ring change a different color when you have notifications. And then you have to ask and say, Madam A, tell me my notifications. And that just seems like an unnecessary step. Google Home has limited notification support. And again, if you're not looking at the lights, you're going to miss a notification as opposed to like on your phone, you'll get a buzz, a beep and all that. You pull out of your pocket and so on. That works on a phone, notifications such as buzzing and beeping and all that, but our assistants have voice capabilities, and that seems to be a much better medium for me to get that information from those devices. So what I'd like to see is eventually these devices speak out loud and say, hey, it's time to leave based on the traffic and the fact that you're going to work right now. I saw that on your calendar. So that's one example. I can come up with 100 different examples, but The question is, do people want proactive voice notifications? Should our smart speakers speak before being spoken to is the question.
You know what? It can. So we'll get into this, but the Nest doorbell, which I installed, actually gives you an option, and you're going to love this, Kevin. If I'm using the face detect, if my doorbell rings, I have the option of turning on a setting that says notify me on all Google devices. So it will notify me on my home that my doorbell's ringing in addition to the chime, right? What's even cooler is if it recognizes the person's face, it will just say, Stacy's home.
Exactly. I knew they had that feature and I think it's awesome. That's a perfect example of the value right there.
So, woo! Okay. Yes. And I see this too. And so this brings me to, I put this under recommended listening, but Slate's Future Tense. So Willa Ramis did a podcast with Al Lindsay, who's the chief of Amazon's voice assistant program. And they talked about what Madame A hears. They talked about the laughing. And what was really interesting is Will, like Kevin and I, really wants more context because that's going to make Madame A's life a little bit easier. But we're in Al Lindsay's all for it. He says that the big challenge is how do we make Madame A more contextually aware? They say they're doing this initially by, you know, having devices listen so it can determine who's closest, figuring out if when you ask it to stop, do they want you to stop music or the video that's on your Fire TV? So they've worked on those and solved that. But the idea of kind of gathering ambient information about your environment and relaying that back to the Echo, that's not happening yet. But he does think that's how we're going to get to the next level of the smart home.
And you know, for people who don't want that, I hope that it's configurable so that way you can just disable those type of notifications. I realize that not everybody wants that. And there are other pieces to the puzzle that need to be in place, such as presence detection. Like if it's time for me to leave for work, the Echo next to my wife downstairs in the living room while she's watching TV shouldn't say, hey, it's time to leave for work.
Yes, that is. And see, and those are the kind of features people will give up their privacy for. Think about how freaked out we were about Gmail and it reading our emails and serving ads, even though people weren't reading it. But that went away so fast because we had free email. And it's not just things like free. It's things like, look at how many people get over the worries about Amazon listening to your conversations because the Echo is such a valuable device to them. By the way, the podcast does talk about how the Echo works. So you can get a refresher course on how it listens and triggers the wake word and your privacy settings there. They are still the same. If they had changed, I would have led with that. So yeah, I recommend you listen to this if you're a huge Echo user. We'll drop a note in the show notes for y'all. And then let's talk about, one of my favorite, I guess, apps from a while back, Stringify, was bought by Comcast. And Comcast just this week said that they've basically relaunched Stringify for their users of their Xfinity Home platform. And neither Kevin nor I are Comcast subscribers. I used to be a Stringify user. And Comcast has basically created all these, they call them flows. Think of it as a recipe or an automation. But Comcast has gone in and created all these flows for people so they don't have to create them themselves. And it's awesome. So there's a movie night flow, for example, that says, when I ask Madam A to run movie night, set the brightness on my living room light to 10%, pause my son's iPad, and change the channel to Stars, Kids, and Family. See, that for me would be family movie night. So none of the flows are as they're usually about four devices. They're not as complicated as some of the flows I used to try to do. But Stringify was a mess because making a flow was so hard. And having all of these pre-configured for you is actually really nice. So yay, Comcast.
Totally agree. And again, neither you nor I have a Comcast for a video provider. A lot of what they're doing with Stringify is tying into the Xfinity X1 video platform. So while you may be a Stringify user, you may not have access to everything it can offer if you're not a Comcast X1 subscriber. So
yes. Now, I recommend, Stringify competes most closely with Younome, which is a sponsor, but Younome is a little bit easier to use, and they're both going in the same direction here. So, you know, load one or the other and start playing around with them is the best way I can tell you to. They're both free. Comcast still lets people who are not Comcast customers use Stringify. By the way, they also added Lutron support. So now they've got support for Casetta lighting, Serena shades, and the Carrier core thermostats. So Yay there.
But and folks who use Android Wear, they have a Android Wear watch app for the first time as well. So you can easily one tap or voice control your scenes and flows.
Yes. Now you will not be able to set up your flows on the app watch.
And you shouldn't be able to on that small screen. So
yeah, those flows, they're tough.
Yeah.
But they're really powerful. That's kind of like the choice of really simple user interface, limited, options. Kind of more complicated, you could do a lot more stuff. So, okay, speaking of watches, let's talk about something that people have noticed. The Apple Watch is losing apps.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I said what I just said. You shouldn't be able to set up, smart home flows on a watch because it just doesn't make sense on that screen. And yes, people are getting a little worried about the Apple Watch app platform because now they saw Instagram is going away from the Apple Watch. And other apps have gone away, such as Twitter and Slack and a couple of others, even Amazon. I don't think there's anything to be upset about as far as the platform, because a lot of those apps really had no place on the small screen on your wrist to begin with. I mean, I'm not going to go through an Instagram feed on a, 1.25-inch screen and flip, 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 and like, and flip, and flip. It just doesn't make sense.
Or Twitter?
No, not Twitter. I mean, yeah, anything with a long flow just certainly doesn't make sense. Notifications for those things, you can still do that without those apps because the way the Apple Watch works is you can mirror the notifications from your phone to your watch. So I don't have the Facebook Messenger app on my Apple Watch, but when somebody messages me, it creates a notification on my phone, which then creates a notification on my watch. And I can even reply from the watch as a result of that. You don't need the app. In a lot of cases, a notification is still very actionable. Again, Instagram, do you want to get notified every time somebody likes your photo on, see that on your watch? You could probably still do that, but you don't need the Instagram app to do anything. Not on your wrist. It just doesn't make sense. So I don't think it's the right place for these apps to begin with.
And that makes a lot of sense. And so Kevin is not freaked out.
No.
And I think maybe if we get cool stuff like the watch to the AirPods and having more voice UIs, maybe that'll, compensate for the screen. So maybe having your smart assistant be able to talk to you and be more context-oriented and notify you, maybe that makes sense. But for now, no. No. And we've moved so much to the visual. That's the other thing, Pictures and videos. It's insane. I feel old when I surf the internet today. Maybe I just feel old. I should tell you guys, it's my birthday. Yay!
Yay!
I just turned 40, so that might be why I'm feeling old. All right, let's talk about, news dumps. Okay, little bits. LifeX has new controls and features. Yay! August now works with SimpliSafe, the smart home security company, so your August lock integrates it now with that. And then Kevin has an exploit.
Well, it's not my exploit, but I'll report on one. Yeah, there was an interesting article over in Wired this week that I read. It's not what I thought it was going to be because the title is A Long-Awaited IoT Crisis is Here and Many Devices Aren't Ready. So I assumed it was like IPv6 or something like that. No, it's all about UPnP, which is Universal Plug and Play. I call it a protocol. It helps devices on a network find and work with other devices. Typically, it's on media streaming devices. Like if you want to use a Chromecast, for example, that uses UPnP to find other devices where it can get content from. So basically, the exploit, it's something that Akamai researchers found, and they said that there are about 4.8 million devices on the open internet that would improperly return a certain query related to UPnP. And nearly a million of those had another issue that would create a network communication vulnerability. And they have a number of exploits that they've seen out of that as well. A lot of people turn UPnP off because it's not the most secure thing in the world. It's pretty open saying, hey, I'm looking for devices on the network. Who's out there? Who can find me? So from a security standpoint, it's not the best. The problem is certain devices require it, such as a Google Chromecast, even a Google Home, because that's how Google Home finds devices, such as other Chromecasts. So I'm not suggesting that your Google Home is insecure or anything like that, but it does kind of make me wonder. I'm trying to wrap my head around what the alternative is to UPnP for IoT devices and home assistants and such. So I don't know what that is yet. I don't know what everyone is using. So not in panic mode, but this is something to be aware of.
All right. I know just who to call and ask, so maybe I'll do that later this week.
There you go.
All right. That's enough news for now. Let's talk about, should I go with things I've added or things I've dumped? Take your pick.
Let's go with dumped, because I'm really curious as to why you dumped this product. Plus, I like to hear you say the product name.
Oh, okay. So I was house cleaning. I think I told you about my spring cleaning. And basically, I have dumped my IKEA Tradfri. How is it supposed to be said?
I think you said it correctly.
Okay. My IKEA Tradfri lights. And I'm sorry, IKEA. I'm sorry. But these worked really well in their own little ecosystem of IKEA stuff. So the hub and the two bulbs that I had worked incredibly well. They did not play well, though, with Madam A. One, I never actually got to work. One worked, one didn't work. And then, so one bulb would, and one bulb just, it would be recognized by as a device on Madam A, but it would never actually be controlled via my voice, except, and here's what's so weird about it, except when it was included in a routine, and then it would work.
That's odd.
Isn't it crazy?
So, I assume this is done through a skill.
It is. It's IKEA has a skill. And I will tell you guys that I deleted it off the Echo. I deleted the skill, or I disabled the skill. I uninstalled the app. I reinstalled the app. I redid the gateway. I re-added everything to Madam A, and it still didn't work. And going through the comments on the app, apparently this is not an isolated incident. I found several things in Reddit about this being a problem. So I just got sick of it. It was my bedside table lamp and my husband's bedside table lamp. And I laugh at this, but you know, it was so nice to be able to say, turn on Stacy, and poof, the lamp would turn on. Turn off Stacy, the lamp would turn off. You know, those are really nice use cases. And my husband was just his, it was his that didn't work.
Of course it was.
You know, this poor man. So basically, I did it out of it was like a mercy killing for my husband. So these are no longer in my home. Or no longer installed. I may try to give them away, so we'll see if that becomes a giveaway later on.
Take my broken IoT devices.
They're not broken. They work
I know.
Well.
I know.
They don't work with Madam A. And I don't believe they work with Google Home.
I don't believe so. No.
That is where those stand. I'm leaving them. Maybe IKEA will get its act together and this will work. But until then, they're not installed. So that is dumped.
All right. Well, what did you add?
Oh, you guys, you know that I love doorbells, or I have a love-hate relationship with doorbells. So I had gotten a review unit of the Nest Hello, and this doorbell is amazing. It is a very good doorbell. It is on par with the Ring Pro in terms of the level of installation and the quality of the video. I think it loads a little bit faster, and then you have all these integrations because I have a Google Home and because I have a Pixel 2 phone. This is definitely the doorbell I would choose for that type of setup. I also have a Chromecast. I have not casted to the Chromecast yet. I'm actually next week I'm going to come to you guys after having Googleified my house. So it's going to be fun. That's where we are right now.
I will be very curious how that works with your Chromecast, only because my NVIDIA Shield, which is also my SmartThings hub, has Google Assistant. And when I'm watching TV, I would love to actually get a notification of somebody at the door and or the video in a pop-up mode. I don't think that's an option right now, but I'm thinking ahead. I would love to see that because all the tools are there. It just needs to be implemented.
Yes. So we're going to see what happens when I Googleify. And I also have the Yale lock. It's not installed on the same door as the doorbell because the doorbell's on my front door and my front door is weird. So we're running some experiments to time how long it takes me to, you know, be able to remotely unlock the door. So we'll tell you more about that. But the doorbell, $239. Install, like the physical install is pretty easy. I think we talked about it last week. I did resolve the wiring issue. And that was mostly a Stacy's got weird wires kind of thing. And then getting it connected was a challenge from my Pixel 2, but was a snap on the iPhone.
That's weird.
Yeah, that was how I felt. It took me a couple customer support interactions and then a reset, and it never connected with my Android. So I'm a little frustrated by that. I find that the adding devices experience is always iffier on an Android device. So If you were able to connect your Nest Hello with an Android, God, tell me how you did it, because woof, I spent probably 3 or 4 days trying to make that work, and that did not work. That's kind of longer than I probably should have, I will be honest. Okay, so those are my products, and now let's answer somebody else's question from the Internet of Things podcast hotline. The IoT Podcast Listener Hotline is brought to you by Schlage, maker of electronic locks. With Schlage, you can just have a brand new electronic lock installed in minutes with just a screwdriver and your own two hands. And they're easy to set up and use. To see what's possible, visit schlage.com to learn more. If you guys want to leave a voicemail for us and have us answer your IoT questions, ring us at 512-623-7424. And Kevin actually has another idea. Even if you don't have questions, you can
call in with some of your favorite home automation routines. I had written a post earlier this week to suggest some of my favorites and some of Stacy's favorites, and we're getting some really good suggestions in the comments, but I would love to have people call in and provide us some of your more unique home automation routines.
Yes, soon we're actually going to do an episode that is all you guys with your comments, your automations, and your questions. So send them in, 512-623-7424. Okay, this week's question is from Derek.
Hey, Stacy. Hey, Kevin. This is Derek from California. My question is around smart home devices. It appears that, you know, Zigbee and Z-Wave are still kind of duking it out, and I am wondering, is there a standalone hub or maybe a starter pack that you might recommend for somebody to connect to their router so that, you know, I don't have to worry about which protocol eventually, you know, wins the game. So again, just looking for a way to break into it with maybe a, you know, recommendation on your part. Thank you guys. Great show. Love it. Bye.
Oh, Derek, this is like, you could have asked this question 5 years ago, and you know what? The answer is still probably going to be the same.
Pretty much. Mostly the same.
Sorry. So yes, this is apparently the eternal question in IoT, and your answer is you need a hub, and the best hubs. Did we find three, Kevin?
We found three. SmartThings supports Zigbee and Z-Wave, as does Wink, as does a router that you pointed out to me.
Yes, this is the Almond 3 router by Securify. That actually, it's kind of an under-the-radar product, but you can buy, this is both a smart home hub, it is a router, and it can actually act as a home security system with the proper, they have a home security system option, so you can add sensors and stuff to it. Those are Zigbee and Z-Wave. One of the routers is $150, three cost $400, and I've tested these out, actually. They're quite good. It's a good hub, it's a nice user interface. I don't know why more people don't have them, in all honesty, because
I don't think people know about them as much.
Yeah. So that is out there, and it's a mesh Wi-Fi router system, which may solve other problems that you have. I don't know.
Right.
So,
and Derek, if you're wondering why we didn't include the new Amazon Echo Plus, which is an Echo and a smart home hub in one, it's because it only supports Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and Zigbee, not Z-Wave.
Yes. Sad. Mm-hmm. All right. So that is the answer to your question. It's by a hub. I'm sorry that is the answer to your question, but it is what it is. All right. Stay tuned, you guys, because our guest this week, Poppy Crum, is the chief scientist at Dolby Labs, and she's going to talk about hearables, how we perceive music, and what it means to give computers hearing. Hey everyone, we're taking a break from the Internet of Things podcast for a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is ForgeRock, and I have Ben Goodman, VP of Strategy and Innovation here at ForgeRock, to talk to us about bringing consent to the edge. So Ben, remind us first what it is that ForgeRock does.
So ForgeRock is a digital identity management company. We have a platform of digital identity management tools that allow us to do things like authentication and authorization, allows us to manage user data. And one of the things that's really exciting about our platform is that we can take that platform and use it in ways that people didn't traditionally use identity management. So outside of the enterprise to the edge. And I think that's what we want to talk about here.
So last week, we did talk about this idea of bringing consent to the edge. How do we do that?
Generally speaking, digital identity has really been about things that you do inside of your computer or your mobile device. So it's been about authentication to a website or authentication to an application. But more and more, especially as brick and mortar type organizations are trying to compete with, you know, native digital organizations, it really is about instantiating all the access control and capability that I have on the web in the real world. And so what we believe is really important now is to take the concepts of digital identity, whether it be authentication or data protection or access control, and actually bring them down to the physical world. What we've been doing is working with a lot of really interesting vendors like ARM and Samsung and Intel, and making sure that we can take all the capabilities that we have in the web and bring it down into the real world. And so some of that may be as simple as utilizing a trusted element or a trusted environment inside of the chip or inside of the device at the edge, and actually making sure that we can control the flow of personal information as it goes to and from that device. It may mean around how we create secure channels and how we do access control. But what's really the key thing here is that more and more people want to bridge the physical world to the digital world. And in order to do that, you need a digital identity, and you need a digital identity vendor that understands how to bridge that. And that's something that ForgeRock has been focusing on really extensively.
So what does that look like for the end customer?
It's important that for the end customer, they don't see this kind of jarring separation between what happens in the physical world and what happens in the digital world. It almost needs to seem very organic. And so what that means is that behind the scenes, we have to create an identity for a thing and manage relationships with it, just like we would manage relationships between two people, and give them, the end user, levers that make sense to them about how they share data, just like they would share data with a friend. And so I think it's very easy if we say to them, hey, you know, in order for me to personalize this hotel room for you, you're going to have to share certain information with us and make those very clear, concise interfaces. We provide the plumbing that allows that to happen, but it's still the responsibility of the vendor that wants to provide this personalized experience to make sure that they're surfacing that in a really user-friendly way.
All right. Where can we go to learn more?
Please check out our website, ForgeRock.com, where we have a ton of information about privacy and really interesting things that our customers are doing with it. And specifically, check out ForgeRock.com/privacy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham. And today's guest is Poppy Crum, who is the chief scientist at Dolby. She is talking to us at South by Southwest as part of the IEEE Tech for Humanity effort. So, hi, Poppy, how are you?
Hi, Stacey. Nice to be here.
I am super excited because you work on something that I am super passionate about, which is hearables, because I think this is a perfect example where, like, technology advancement meets actual human betterment. So, actually, let's get right into the fact that I am super optimistic about hearing aids and hearables. How do you feel about this technology?
I really think the ear is going to be a transformational place with regard to both AI and the augmented reality hub in the future. There's so much information and learning about an individual that happens in your ear. We can talk about that. But there's this also a lot of movement that's happening in this space right now that where we're seeing a huge convergence between entertainment, lifestyle, and hearing health. I'm a true believer that our technologies are only going to be as good as we can get them to if we have personalized devices. And the ear really becomes this amazing hub of information between the individual and the external world to really think about how we optimize our experiences and make these devices and enable our IoT devices to be what I would call an extension of our agency.
Wow, that was super deep. Okay. You brought up a whole bunch of stuff for me, so we're going to break some of this down, because I was thinking, hey, hearables, they're medical devices. But then when you talk about AR and VR, I'm like, oh my gosh. And at Dolby, I'm like, that is an immersive experience kind of thing. Are those false breakdowns for me? Should I be thinking of hearing just broadly and we should apply it everywhere?
That's a great question. I think there are a lot of ways we can think about it. I try to break it down into different ways a device in my ear might actually be able to enhance my life, or ways we even use them now. You could separate it, and let's start with the way people are already using hearables might be as assistants. I think that's a pretty ubiquitous use that's showing up. And you can talk about a hearable both as a static hearable device like an Amazon Echo, Google Home, or a wearable device, but let's only talk about the wearables right now. You know, as an assistant, you've got something intersecting other applications, ways of causing things to happen in my world that I'm actually requesting. But in your ear, you've also got information that it can pick up on. You've got within, you know, there's this really rich set of biological signals that having sensors in that one particular place in your body, that tiny sort of, I call it a little dime-sized patch, you can pick up your heart rate. You can pick up electroencephalograms, you pick up EEG, you can pick up blood oxygenation, your galvanic skin response. Suddenly you've got this really rich set of internal information about the user state. So how do we use that to signal information? But you've also got a device that's listening to your environment. So now you've got information coming in and information about you, whether it's through your voice or through reading information about your state that's going out. And that interplay is, I think, a really important part of the future.
Wow, I didn't realize you could get all that from my ears. So let's actually go back and talk about ears for a second and hearing and all the information. Like, maybe it's not as simple as how it works, but if I'm thinking about taking information, what is information that's good to get from my ears, eardrum, and what makes sense to happen in an in-ear device?
Great question. And if we look back 5 years, things have really evolved in the last 5 years. That's why the way we might have described things even 2 years ago is different than how I'm talking about them today. You know, in the last few years, people have been able to, in a lab, and, you know, just with ear sensors, capture, picking up and decoding my attention, my attentional, my where it's being directed, the who, the what, the where. And you end up with these inferences happening in a lab might be somewhat noisy, but suddenly you pair that with environmental intelligence and context. I know I'm at a restaurant because the device can tell, or I know I've got certain talkers I'm trying, you know, that are in my social network, and my device knows that. It knows who those people I care about are. And so you start painting this really rich picture that's going to actually truly enhance my experience and not just be feeding me, you have a text message, you ought to go check your email. We want to get away from that.
So I could literally mute people I don't like.
Don't we all do that? But I mean, it's completely possible that your device in, you know, getting out of the lab is one thing, but we're really moving towards that. Your device would allow you to have one conversation and listen to another. Multitasking. Let's do that in an effective way, but it can make you more social. Again, we already do that in our attention. You know, how the cocktail party, solving that kind of problem, you know, where I'm in a noisy environment and how do I make sense of my acoustic environment, someone who has hearing loss, that's one of the hardest problems. And for someone that doesn't have hearing loss, that's still a hard problem. You go to a restaurant that's popular, it's really noisy, and it's something that greatly impacts our social communication. So what we want are devices that enable us to have better communication with each other without us having to break that conversation and go, you know, turn up a cell phone or intersect it and pull these things out. You want your device to know. So what if my device, it can pick up one on my cognitive load? That's a fairly robust thing that we can track quite easily. It can tell if my brain's having to work harder and it responds. It's like, how do we change that technological loop? Because you've got these different devices. You've got information about me. These things that are happening in the world of AI and machine learning are we becoming much more intelligent to the environment. You know, in the military, they call that situational awareness. And when you think about what is my situational awareness for my context that's really relevant to my device and to me, I want my devices optimizing their signal processing and their capabilities to be intelligent to that without my having to intervene in that type of intersection. And so that's what we're really starting to see in, especially in development, especially in sort of what I would call bleeding edge technologies for hearing aids as well.
Okay, so you're actually talking about customization both to my hearing level and then also to whatever environment I'm in. That is a lot of computational power. Or it feels like it should be a lot of computational power. So what is happening just on the physical hardware side that's making this possible today?
I think there's really a beautiful resurgence in silicon development that's happening. If you look at let's just talk about hearing health for a moment, because the richness of what's going to happen or needs to happen to truly make a hearable device, a significant one that we all benefit from, is a convergence of both entertainment and lifestyle and this hearing health space. In the hearing health space, you see a lot of hearing aids and such make use of the same silicon, make use of the same signal processing. And it's really quite constrained. But in order to get a lot of this more advanced machine learning and deep nets and things that are going to enable more intelligent experiences, the silicon development has really started. There's been a big resurgence in that development to be able to miniaturize computation into a small enough form factor for a hearable. Now, form factor is a huge issue. You know, you look at hearing aids, they really haven't changed much at all. And there's a big stigma associated with some of the form factors that currently exist, things that are behind the ear. They come with a medical branding on them.
They say you're old, and people hate that.
What I see that's really wonderful about how things are going to transform is if everybody's wearing hearables, it destigmatizes it for everyone. Because unlike vision, where people might say not wearing glasses, you have a muscle benefit sometimes, and I would question that, but there are reasons. With the case of hearing, if you actually don't innervate your hearing, if you have hearing loss and you aren't stimulating, if people wait to get hearing loss, there's actually an increased deficit. You have neural death that happens sort of all through the pathway. So there's this very important aspect of getting people to not just preserve their hearing, but actually intervene when you have hearing loss as soon as possible. The reality is we all start having hearing loss when, you know, in our early 20s. And it's, you know, some amalgamation of things from our environment, exposure to noise, ototoxicity, aspirin's ototoxic. A lot of things we just naturally ingest affect our bodies.
Okay, so my life as a rock critic in my college years and my incredible ingestion of aspirin is causing me some angst now. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay, but let's go back to what it takes, before you freak me out more, to miniaturize this. What is the ideal form factor, do you think, or what is the form factor we're working towards? And then will it just be something we have every day that we just wear and we listen to music and we go talk and we pop it in when we're like of a certain age? I mean, what does this look like in the future?
That's a great question because it's evolving. And think about it this way. I don't like to think about having hearing loss. There was a statistic I came across, 19% of 12 to 17-year-olds already have some degree of noise-induced hearing loss. And that's a pretty terrifying statistic. But when we think about hearables, I really do feel we don't want to talk about them with regard to hearing loss. Okay, we want to talk about it with regard to personalization. And how do we, you know, we all have, our physiological systems are all different. Our environments are different. The relevancies and sensitivities that our environments demand of us are different. So we want processing that is capable to adjust to that and learn those needs of us. With regard to a form factor, that's a really fun question because there are a lot of different ways you can go and things you're seeing happening. There's no question a small device is interesting. I mean, if you look at where the hearable companies are right now, it runs the gamut. It's hugely heterogeneous in terms of form factor. You've got devices like Eargo who are trying to be a sort of disruptive. I love their form factor. They're sort of a disruptive. They still call themselves a hearing aid, but they're in ear, almost entirely hidden from the world. There's nothing that goes over your ear versus a company. There's a hearable company called Human that has these sort of elfin devices that fit completely over your ear, which I also think is beautiful. You're trying to create a very different, in both cases, a different landscape than what the historical hearing aid form factor would have been. You also have a lot of devices like New Hera, former Doppler, where you have an in-ear device, but it's one thing to point out here is it's fully occlusive. And everything you hear from the world is electroacoustically represented, which is just on some level a philosophical conundrum I like to think about. It's
so instead of the analog signals, we're getting the digital interpretation of the analog signals.
Precisely. And we can do that pretty well. But it's this funny thing. So to me, and this is my personal belief, that the ideal form factor is something that leverages our natural physiological capabilities and then gives us things on top of that rather than just recreates it. So, you know, because if you think about if I'm going to wander the world, would you wear a VR device if I tell you everything you're going to experience is entirely an accurate representation of the world and we'll be able to give you more, but it's all going to be synthetic. Would you go out for the rest of your life doing that?
No, I would not. Which gets to this idea of perception. And you've done a lot of standards work around the concept of perception. So let's talk about your philosophy there, actually. That'll be fun. So in this case, you're talking about letting someone else mediate how you experience the world. But you also work in standards efforts to establish baselines for how people at different levels experience the world, correct?
So my background, I'm a neurophysiologist by training, but also I've been in the technology space for quite some time. I really like to think that I spend my time trying to identify ways our technology is going to best intersect with us that's dependent on both an understanding of our biology, but also our perceptual realities. We each experience the world in very unique ways. Some of those we can track, some of those we haven't been able to, but you know, we're learning more about how we can actually objectify what someone's experiencing and use that to inform technology or build. You know, I like to say we're building technologies that are, you know, the way they intersect with us, it feels like a true extension of our agency and not the technology telling us what we have to experience or what we are going to do, but anticipating how, you know, we would naturally believe and experience things. For me, the world going at every moment is, and this is, I think, you know, the way we are thinking about things now, it's a probabilistic, you know, experience. And many features come together to determine how we experience, how we each differentially experience perhaps the same piece of information. You know, and you can probabilistically model those things, whether, you know, if I go back 20 years, I spent a lot of time thinking about probabilistic inference for how we experience auditory and visual information to form a holistic object about where it is, when it happens, and you can develop very, you know, intelligent models of this. But now you get into this, you know, transition where the device needs to understand those perceptual realities, because the device is going to have a lot more information than we ever experience, right? We don't experience the world as it is. And having a device tell us things in the wrong place or intersect us in the wrong place that isn't consistent with that is jarring, and actually I think will make us less effective. So it's how do we bridge that gap?
So it's like we've been doing a lot of work. We read a lot about computer vision. This is kind of computer hearing and understanding what different things mean to a person when we're actually perceiving things. So I always know that if I hear a car in my, like behind me, I always look and check and I know exactly where that car is based on my hearing. A computer may not have that sense until we program it to have that sense. Is that kind of close to this?
Yes, on some level, you know, so computer hearing is very relevant, but it's more than that, right? It needs, there's information, what it tells you, how it informs you, how it makes use of that information. So something as simple as I want to inform you that there's a car right behind you. There's other things I have to get right because now I've got to create a binaural representation. Maybe I've got an inner device. So I have to synthetically recreate, if I'm trying to do this in a, say, an occlusive environment, I have to synthetically recreate information that informs you in the right way to make sure that you react in a way that's indicative of what would be the most successful for you. In fact, that's a pretty tough problem in that case because I've got to sonify the information, meaning I need to identify what's the best cue I could give you. But I also have to make sure that every single time you experience that or someone else does, it's in the accurate location. And that's something that the industry has not been able to get correct yet.
And the variance is based on what? Our hearing loss over time or just...
So it's a multitude of features because one thing, we each have unique, what I like to call cookie cutters of our bodies. The anthropometry of our ears, our head, creates a very unique filter of attenuations and excitations across, you know, amplifications and attenuations across every frequency and sound in this world that is unique to each of us. But we also have very unique hearing patterns and different physiological changes that have happened to our bodies. And we also have then the context of the information of the environment. Those three pieces come together and now you have an accurate representation. But right now, what most of the world does, what most of the technological space and offerings in the market do is assume we're all the same.
Wow, I just learned a lot. And now I have a sense of both how hard it is to develop reactive, responsive hearing aids, responsive, I don't even know what we should call this. We probably shouldn't call it hearables. What do you think?
I'm happier with hearables than hearing aids, for sure. I like to say it's all about hearing enhancement. We can have assistance. We can have enhancement. We can, you know, deliver information out, meaning understand our bodies and have a device that helps us connect to our environment to make us more effective. But it's how we bring information in, too, in an effective way that actually helps us make our lives more augmented and enhanced.
Awesome. All right. Oh, when can I expect to see things like that are this cool?
Some of them are already coming out there, so I think very soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Poppy.
Thank you, Stacy.
That's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, if you'd like more IoT news, sign up for my newsletter at stacyoniot.com. We'll see you next week.